Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Don't sweat the technique. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Dave Chappelle called him juice.
Okay.
You like Chappelle?
It's different, yes. It's different than his nickname. Or what he goes by.
Chappelle's nickname
I'm
for
just
him.
Just saying, just because Jay Chappelle calls somebody something doesn't mean that that's what he goes by.
That's what I call him.
Okay, that's different.
I like Chappelle. Chappelle's funny. I like a good stand-up comedian. The guy from New York's pretty good. The guy looks like a vampire with a mustache. I forget his name. He had a Netflix special out like a month ago. He's pretty good.
Looks like a vampire.
Yeah, he was on The Roast.
I don't know who that is.
He's pretty good. Do you watch a bunch of stand-up? Yeah, I know the answer to that. Stand-up comedy, Netflix special. He's got a mustache from New York. He's a big Knicks fan.
I don't know who you're talking about.
I'll find it later.
Knicks fan. I don't know.
Oh, it's Andrew Schultz.
Oh, that's the guy that was on Club Shay Shay or whatever that he was.
Was he on Club Shay Shay?
Yeah, and then he was taking shots at, I think he and Ryan Clark got into it, shocking. But I think he and
Andrew Schultz and Clark did?
They went back and forth because of something that I think he said while he was on with Shannon Sharp.
How could you be offended by anything a comedian says?
I mean, come on, man.
They're comedians.
Right, well.
It's funny.
I'm not going to say that I haven't had my beefs with comedians over the years, but it's in a different situation.
Yeah, it's not stand-up.
True.
I guess his podcast wasn't stand-up either, though.
No.
I can't just.
Yeah, it was a one-on-one interview.
It's so funny.
They broached a ton of topics.
Like, how could you think a comedian's ever being serious to where you're going to, like, be offended by what a comedian is saying to you? That's funny to me. All right, anyway, 713-780-ESPN. We've milked the clock enough. Alex says tell Joe to leave the show the way that it is. Yeah, send an email or send a DM. AV, maybe that'll help us out, but that's all we can say to you. But the Texans offense had failures last year. They had some shortcomings. Aaron Wilson said some stuff about this, huh?
He did, yeah. It finally came out. I was a little surprised about it because we had questions about where the breakdowns, as it specifically relates, first and foremost, to the offensive line, all the changes they made and things that we were guessing on were going on behind the scenes, and then in the bigger picture of how it may have affected the offense.
And behind the scenes, you know, there were players that had issues with Bobby and they didn't think he was listening to feedback and not running plays they wanted him to run. And then we had a discord in the offensive line room between Chris Strausser and Cole Popovich. And Strausser has seemed checked out for years to me and others. And so my sources have told me that Strausser controlled the playing time, but it was Popovich who was giving the players the guidance that they'd hoped for and the coaching and the feedback and, you know, being really personally invested in these players and their developments. But, you know, with everything, you know, things change and now they're trying to overhaul this group, this offense. And, yeah, the whole season will be a referendum on the offense if it's good enough. And if it's not...
Yeah, to cut off that sentence. Aaron goes a little run-on sentence at times.
Yeah, he gets a little chatty. But at the same time, I mean, this gives you a little bit kind of a peel back of the curtain of kind of answering some of the things we were wondering about, from personnel to how they were coaching them up to the fact that it seems kind of odd that it was so dysfunctional that your assistant line coach was actually giving them the guidance, but that your line coach was the one that dictated who played.
I don't think that's not that crazy. I really don't.
I think that they can both be, if you're the line coach, you know exactly what you want out of players. You should be at least in part partaking in what you're working with and asking these players to work on and do.
Do we know if Strausser was on the field or in the booth?
That I do not know.
I mean, that could be a factor.
Sure.
Like if Strausser's in the booth, then that's a huge factor.
But you would think at practice during the week, this is what the time that you're actually working on getting these guys better, improving and cleaning up mistakes and doing things like that, that they would both be on the field for practices.
Yeah. The there's a lot of times, though, where you go a little good cop, bad cop. So, like, that, sure. that this isn't out of the realm of possibility. Like, do I think it's the most ideal thing, most optimal thing? I'm not saying that's the case. But it doesn't shock me as one who's been around coaching staffs, like on the sideline and on the field and stuff like that. Like, you have a lot of position coaches that might not be as in touch game day that you would expect.
Different.
Now, practices are different. Yep. I would agree there.
Yep. And then from the standpoint of the first part of the quote in the comment was, is that CJ or others? But if you're saying that there are guys that were not happy with the fact that they wanted certain plays to be run and there were certain things that they wanted that they weren't getting from Slowik as well, maybe there was a whole lot more dysfunction that they were leading on, because at the end of the year, it almost seemed like they were protecting Slowik. They were going out of their way to celebrate and talk about how much they loved Bobby Slowik. But now this is the first we're hearing that maybe behind the scenes, the truth of the matter was there wasn't all that kumbaya continuity and that there were issues.
See, this is all hard to grasp. I'm not saying that Aaron's wrong per se, but there's a lot of things that I think you can ask that throws a wrench into this. And then the one thing you can also go back to is, why was their offensive line pretty decent 2 years ago when they had no talent? Strouser was the O-line coach then. He got less interested and got more talent, and the line was worse. Like, that's kind of curious to me. Like, I don't know why that was the case. And look, maybe it all was Strouser's fault. But I also, and look, I'm guilty of it too. I think there's a part of fans and Texans fans that want the Texans to be good this year, and everybody does, that are pointing at Strouser as the, and Slowik, as the reasons that the Texans offense wasn't good. Because if they were the reasons that the Texans offense was not good, that means that addition by subtraction, you get rid of them, voila, the Texans offense is going to be good. So I wonder how much reaching there is here. I wonder how much of, like, moving the goalpost there is going on here as a way to excuse a poor offense and a way to also be optimistic about this year's offense.
Now, there's a way to look at this from both sides, right? Because if you're looking at it from the Texans' perspective, you're probably feeding and maybe one of the sources for telling Aaron Wilson so that the word gets out there so that it can look like, hey, this was all about the continuity of our coaching staff. This is why the changes had to be made. The guys we are bringing in are going to be much better. However, because it worked in lockstep with the fact that they got rid of 3/5 of their starting offensive linemen, that maybe that there's more to this in terms of the fact that there is some truth to the fact that maybe the coaching staff was one part of it. But the other thing was that in terms of trying to make sure it doesn't happen again, they had to addition by subtraction some guys that were being problem children during the week.
And then the second question I would have to this is, if it was so dysfunctional, so bad, like we're being led to believe, and again, I'm not dismissing that. I hope it's the case, because mm-hmm. if that's the case, then there's probably more reason for optimism of offensive success this year. But the question that I would have is, if it was so dysfunctional, why didn't D'Amico get rid of them?
Because during the season, I think it would be too difficult, especially if it's...
If it was so dysfunctional, and we're talking addition by subtraction, why was it so hard?
Players or coaches?
The coaches.
See, from a coaching perspective, I think, and he's made mention of this towards the end of the year or after the year, that it would be, especially because you're not going to get rid of Slowik in the middle of the year.
Why not? If it's so dysfunctional and you think you're better without him, why wouldn't you?
Because who are you replacing him with?
There's multiple options.
You could go to Gerard. I get
it. Or you can go Bill Lazor, former offense coordinator in the NFL.
I just think that removing an OC mid-season just basically turns everything on its ear with a team that's going to be going to the playoffs. I think that it could just be so disruptive that I just don't think that that's an in-season thing you do, especially if you're talking about removing him and the head offensive line coach.
Look, they promoted the assistant offensive line coach,
which tells me that they believe in his abilities, but that he was stifled by the guy in front of him.
Which, why wouldn't you get rid of him?
Because of continuity during the year. I just don't think those are moves that you make during the course of a season. If you're a team that's going nowhere, uh-huh. sure, then absolutely. And now you're going to get a trial run for guys that you think you believe could do the job better. But I think that if you're a playoff caliber team, a division winning team, I don't think that's something that you do in the middle of the season.
Look, I mostly agree with you, and we're kind of workshopping and talking out a very specific scenario. But if you think the dude is that big a problem and he is the reason that you're not having success in really whatever industry, then you get rid of the problem.
See, I think that, again, when we're talking about the fact that it goes deeper than just your O-line coach, too, because it's as it relates to his boss, which is your OC, and the fact that we've talked about, and I think at the end of the season it came out, too, that maybe schematically they could do things differently to run things that are more advantageous to take advantage of the personnel that they have on the roster that maybe they didn't do a year ago, as well as some of the bad apples that were maybe not willing to do what they were not asked to do. But I think that that's why it could completely just sink.
I don't know why you
the
would,
ship in the like, middle of the
why,
season.
Why would it though? Like you have continuity there. Like they've been with your they've been on your staff the last 2 years. Like if Bobby Slowick all of a sudden isn't calling plays, like I don't know how it's sink. Like you're not learning a new playbook. You're not learning a new scheme. It's just somebody else is calling the plays. And if you think that person is such a negative, you get rid of the person. Like it's the Taylor Scott thing. Like Taylor Scott was so bad of a pitcher, you think he's a negative, you get rid of the relief pitcher. Why wouldn't you do that for a coaching staff? Like just because Slowick's gone doesn't mean you don't have continuity.
I don't think you do both of them. I don't think you do both of them because I think it would be disruptive based on we all know that you get into a routine.
Why is it so disruptive though?
Because I think that it's someone completely different that's going to be
they've been here the last 2 years.
But they're going to be on the clock too, so they're going to be expected to do what they're supposed to.
Real quick, not only have they been here the last 2 years, they're still on the staff. They're still on the staff.
Sure, but what I'm saying is if you do that in the middle of a season, that from a player's perspective, it can be completely disruptive. It could be the fact that, again, you also don't, like from a Tunsil perspective, if you're going to try and trade him in the offseason, then you're not going to do something with Laremy Tunsil if Popovich decides you're not going to sit him down, you're not going to healthy scratch him. And so and as a new guy coming in that used to be the assistant, the first thing you're going to do is go after one of your best players at left tackle.
Well, I mean, why do you have to go after a guy?
Like, but going after him means you're gonna bench him or you're gonna reprimand.
That's not happening. You weren't benching Laremy Tunsil.
But that's what I'm saying. And if you have plans on getting rid of him at the end of the year, that's something that is not going to be on the table. So how much are you going
to
change?
Hold on. I don't mean to like pick holes, but you think in week 15 they already knew they were moving on from Laremy Tunsil?
I think they had a pretty good indication that based on how he was acting behind the scenes, they knew what they didn't want to deal with again for another year. I really believe that.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like that's a stretch, but there's no way of proving that, so there's no sense in arguing it. I just don't know how disruptive it would be to fire a play caller. We see it all the time in the NFL.
I think it's the combination. I think you're firing a play caller and your offensive line coach, and I think that has a real legitimate chance to be disruptive to a playoff team.
But if they're so bad, I don't see the disruption there.
So bad was still allowing this team to be a playoff caliber team.
Because of their defense
being
really good.
But you don't know what you don't know.
Offensively.
If you all of a sudden go to a guy that's never called plays before and or an offensive line never been an offensive line coach before.
They didn't have to do that. Laser has called plays before.
Okay. But by doing both in unison and not knowing what you don't know about everybody other than the guy that you mentioned, then I think that you set yourself up for failure more than success by doing it in the middle of the season.
But then they fired the guys.
Again, I think they were putting Band-Aids all over the place because DeMeco also wants to show loyalty to his coaching staff. I don't think DeMeco, being friends of Bobby, wanted to get rid of Bobby in the middle of the season.
See, that's kind of where I'm going here. Like, I don't love that my head coach can't make difficult decisions in season because of loyalty.
But you know that's not the first time it's happened either.
If it's the disruption thing, okay. Like, I can listen to that. Like, that's football reason. Mm-hmm. I might disagree with you about, like, the amount of disruption there. But if DeMeco's decision, no, we think that's too disruptive. We can't do that. We think it would, you know, paralyze us. Okay, I can listen to that. I might disagree, but I can listen to that argument for sure. If the decision was, we know we can be better with Bill Lazor or Gerard Johnson calling plays than Bobby Slowick, but I'm not going to do it because he's my friend, that is a much bigger issue.
But you know that we've seen it throughout sports history where coaches don't...
That doesn't make it right, though.
You're right. Two things could be true. But you know that there are coaches that are hell-bent loyal to their guys that are... If it means that I keep my job, but I got to get rid of my staff, or that I got to get rid of someone that, like you said, you're loyal to... That they will go to their grave fighting tooth and nail for their loyalties to their people.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. Let's carry this over on the other side. Killer B, 713-780-3776. Killer B's ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer B's.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Having a layered conversation, Texans offense, not mandated by the suits at all. And May 27th. 713-780-ESPN. Aaron Wilson detailing some of the, what's the best word, struggles of the offense last year, the shortcomings of the offense last year, in large part because of Bobby Slowick and Charlie Strauser, the offensive line coach for the Houston Texans last year. Of course, both of those no longer with the organization. Nick Caley, the new offensive coordinator. El Jefe's son, Popovich, the new offensive line coach. He was the assistant last year. And then, you know, I feel like these guys are getting all of the blame of the 2024 offensive struggles, because I think everybody wants them to be the blame, because if they are the blame, that means the 25 Texans offense should be better by default. And not dismissing that at all. I want it to be the case. And I don't think Slowick was great, and Strauser didn't have a good year last year. Although 2 years ago, you know, I might do that. I might go pull back some old D'Amico Ryans press conference stuff, talking about the great job that Strauser did 2 years ago. Because I remember he was doing it.
Well, it's funny, too, because
all the offense. Hold on, let me finish real quick. The offensive line had so many injuries 2 years ago that every single press conference that D'Amico Ryans had, he was giving Strauser a lot of praise for being able to piece it together. And then last year, he's the world's worst.
Well, I was going to say, what's funny, too, is the fact that Aaron Wilson didn't go out and just say last year. He said that he thought that his sources told him that Strauser has been mailing it in.
Yeah, I heard that.
For multiple years. For the last couple of years.
Then why did
that
they,
would include the what you're talking yeah. about.
Why did he make chicken salad at a
Yeah, because I mean, are you going well, that there's a bigger point of contention to wonder about is how far is he willing to go?
And D'Amico was praising him 2 years ago.
And then why didn't he change at the end of the year? Why he didn't change at the end of the first year was probably because of the fact that if the line was sustained, they did their job.
You're right.
Then why are you getting rid of it?
Yeah, I see what you're saying here. Because if he didn't do a good job 2 years ago, move on.
That's right. Except for they had some success on the field.
Yeah. And I can listen to your argument of like the disruption part. Again, disagree with it. I can, and like that's okay to like keep a coach. Like I hear that argument, like, you know, 60-40 disagree. Like I can hear it. I don't love it, but I can live with it. The loyalty thing, I can't. Like if you know that that guy is a liability and you're keeping him because you're loyal to the soil, that's not a great look. I would expect, look, if GM Todd right now, he felt like Joe George was not a benefit to the station, I would hope that he wouldn't look at his loyalty to him and would try to find the best guy for the job. Maybe it's Brian. Twitch was trying to promote Brian earlier today. And, of course, I don't have any sincerity.
But I think that
here.
Also every situation is different in the fact that you might be loyal to a guy because you've worked with him previously in your career and you've had success. The problem is that every situation is different. The personnel you're dealing with could be, and their personalities, completely different than what worked for you the last time. But as coaches, because you know how volatile the business is, you do want to stay loyal to those that you've worked with and built relationships with. But you have to also realize that in the situation that sustainability is based on the success that that team is having. And if he's not the right guy for the job, whether it be your players and their personalities, or just that he's lost that fire, mm-hmm. you got to move on.
I want to win games. So, like, I'm going to always have the person that is in the best position to win me football games. I don't care if it's before the season, the off season, or if it's in week 8. If I'm the head coach, that is always my focus. You owe that to the organization. You owe that to who's employing you. You owe that to the rest of the coaching staff. You owe that to the players. Every decision that you make should be about winning. And if he wasn't willing to move on from guys because he's friendly with them, that's an issue. I would also say it's an issue if you feel like, firing him and Bill Lazor gives you a better chance to win, I think you should do it. If Strauser's fired in week 15 and you bring in Popovich, who you promoted anyways, that gives you a better chance of winning. I think that you should do it. Always.
That also goes back to how are the players going to react to it? And we don't know.
That's
right?
Part of the equation.
We don't know. Yeah. But I think that, it's easy to say that. I understand that where you're coming from in the fact that, and I'm not trying to belittle the point. I'm saying that, the easy solution would be if you don't feel like they're getting the job done, then make the change. But it also goes a step further as to how are your players going to react to that? How are they going to react to it, like, emotionally, systematically? And how are they going to be effectively on the field because of that?
I mean, they're pros, though. Like,
they're supposed to be, Jeremy. We just got done talking about pitchers that are professional athletes that might not be taking the best care of themselves.
That's a bit different than the mentality.
But still, as a pro, you're supposed to be able to handle whatever is thrown your way.
Right.
In the locker room.
But one's like
some guys
laziness.
Aren't going to do that.
But, like, not keeping yourself in shape is laziness. That's not the same thing.
But it's also, from the standpoint, you know, missing, extended periods of time with injuries that we question whether you should be missing time for. Or you're loyal to a coach because that coach has really, you know, personally done a lot for you,
mm-hmm.
even though at the end of the day, from the team perspective, he's not the right guy for the job, but it's going to affect you if he's no longer there.
Yeah. You're tight with AJ, which, I mean,
are we tight? We're friends.
Okay. Yeah. AJ got fired right at the end of the show. You gonna have trouble doing a show tomorrow?
I mean, if he was our everyday regular producer, but I feel bad for AJ.
Would you have trouble doing the show tomorrow?
No.
There you go.
But it's
I don't think CJ Stroud would have a lack of performance if they moved on from Bobby Slowick after week 14 last year. I don't think any professional would.
But we're talking about 11 guys, and we're talking about more than that, and we're talking about how these guys react. I think that it's one thing to say if CJ Stroud can handle it. It's another thing
Nico
to say
Collins,
if other guys
Joe Mixon.
But you're talking about veterans. We had some young guys. We had Patterson. We had Juice. We had younger guys on the
those
offensive
guys
line.
You think Juice would be a lesser player in the final four games if they fired him before the final month of the year?
I think if there's significant change that goes with the firing.
And if they're better coaches too, by the way.
Right, but you don't have training camps and practices. All of a sudden, if you're going to switch on a dime and you're expected to make it better in the middle of the season, you don't have the right time frame to be able to utilize all of what you might want to implement.
I don't think you're implementing, though. I don't think a new interim coach is going to all of a sudden, hey, CJ, start throwing left-handed. Like, you're not going to implement crazy.
If you're saying stick with the same system but just change the person in charge, then I don't think you're going to get any better. So then why make the change in the middle of the season?
Why do it in the offseason?
Because in the offseason, you can change the system. You can change personnel if you need to. You can change a lot of things because you have the time and the practice time to do it.
That was a dumb question. The answer would be because you feel like the other guy gives you a better chance to win the game. Like, rewinding, playing out a scenario after week 14, whatever. If D'Amico Ryans felt that firing Slowick gave him a better chance of winning games and the offense being better because Gerard Johnson or Bill Lazor, who's a former offense coordinator in the NFL, gave him a better chance to win than Slowick, he should have made the move.
I think, but you have to weigh the fact that in the process of doing that, you said, to give you a better chance. But is there also a chance in the pitfalls of what could go wrong with this that you could take a season where you were fighting for but going to win the division and be a playoff team, and could it take it the wrong direction if it backfires, or there's the other side of the equation where it's not going to be successful and you could blow up what otherwise would have been a successful season with the coaches that were still in place?
I mean, the Texans,
I'm not doing that.
They dropped two of their last three and then went 1-1 in the playoffs. So, like, what was the
You're saying
gain?
If they did it after week 14. We don't know how long this was going on either to where that you could have done.
Well, I mean, week 14 would have been the natural time to do it because it was after a bye.
Sure, but it could have, you know, if this was going on all season long, we're focused on week 14. This could have, at any time, you could think about doing it. But that late in the season, with the big games that they had coming up in a short period of time, too, with even less practice time, I don't know that how that makes sense.
Because the other guy can call plays better. He's going to score more points
for
you.
But we're talking about offensive line coach and offensive coordinator. So you don't know what you don't know, but I'm sure that
an estimated guess on who would be better for the job.
But I also think behind the scenes there was an estimated guess going on, discussions being had about if we did this now, weighing the pros and cons of saying, could the bottom fall out on us?
What if it helps your ceiling? Like, yes, there is
right,
risk,
there's
but
the
there's
pros
also
and
reward.
The cons.
Sure.
It could go one way or the other.
And if your ceiling is tapped out as a divisional round team with Slowick, like, why wouldn't you do it?
Because I don't think that they felt like their season was tapped out at just a divisional round.
Well, they're foolish then. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Gary?
Hey, what's up, guys? Great discussion, by the way. Hey, I think I kind of want to agree with both of y'all a little bit. So I think it's really simple. I do agree that it's probably, like, a little extreme to fire the OC, right? But I just think it was a flat-out mistake to keep the offensive line coach, especially with that late of a bye week. Like, we should have made the change, right? It's not like it could get much worse. Worst case, it stays the same. You send the message. I don't know. Whatever cliche. The other part is, and, you know, I'm a Nick Caserio, not a Nick Caserio guy, but I feel like some of the stuff in the locker room came from the fact that I feel like they were forced to play Kenyon Green. Like, Kenyon Green stinks. Like, he's not even, like, an NFL-level player. And, you know, that was pretty apparent since he was a rookie. You guys said that the offensive line was great 2 years ago. Guess what happened 2 years ago? Kenyon Green was out for the whole freaking season. So I think stuff like that, you know, could cause harm in the locker room, basically like the coach playing his son, because he was such a high draft pick, they were forced to play him. That's more of a conspiracy theory, but that's what I think.
Appreciate the call, Gary. And see, I think that's where the scenario plays out, too. If you just want to do what everybody was calling for, I don't think anybody was calling for Slowick's head during the season. I think Strasser was on the table.
That happened. No, people were calling for Slovic. Like, I remember Sarge asking D'Amico about, or was it Caserio? He might have asked Caserio about why Slovic was still the man for the job, and that's when Caserio, like, stood on the table for Slovic.
This leads me to more of my point when I was hearing all this, too, from Aaron Wilson, is the fact that there was a whole hell of a lot more dysfunction than they let on. The fact that everybody was covering everybody else. They were covering for everybody else. They were wanting you to believe it was sunshine and rainbows. And if you just wanted to change Strasser, it's one thing. But I think that the thought of changing both your OC and your offensive line coach at that point, or anytime once the season got past the midway point, I just think that they probably weighed the fact, and at least they thought that there was too great of a risk that the season could bottom out instead of going where they were and eventually going to end up.
Now we're just putting like parameters on it, but it's fun. Mm-hmm. If you're D'Amico coming off the bye week 14, you're 8-5, and you know that you're going to go 2-2 down the stretch, win the division, you're going to win a wild card game, and then you lose in the division. Like, you know you're going to go 2-2 and then finish in the division. But you're given the option of taking that, or option B, you can fire your OC and your offensive line coach, and you're either going to win out and win it all, or you're going to lose the rest of the games and miss the playoffs. Are you taking option A or option B?
I think they're taking option A.
Give me option B.
I think option A. I understand what you're going to take, but I'm saying from an organizational standpoint, that's a successful season. That's a division win. That's progress as a team for the second straight year. That's doing things that way ahead of schedule. And then you can make changes in the offseason as opposed to running the risk of not making the playoffs and then everybody's asses are on the line and being questioned and everything is a negative going into the entire offseason. I think as a franchise, they would rather take the division win and a playoff win than the boom or bust.
You're throwing away the chance at the first ever Super Bowl in Houston's football history.
Yeah, because there's also
history.
A chance you don't even make the playoffs.
I'm taking that chance
every
day. I know
what you're taking.
And I get your point with D'Amico and Caserio, like their jobs are on the line. So it might be like it's... I see the point of your answer. Now, if you're Cal McNair, you're picking option B every time.
Right, but you're saying
because you don't have a
we're
hot
just
seat.
Hypothetically, and we're having fun kicking it around.
I can't.
I just think from their standpoint, they're not going to put their own butts on the line, as opposed to knowing that they have everything stays status quo in terms of their jobs, their ability to do what they want to do with their football team, and everybody looking at it as, hey, that was a positive season.
Look, I'm not even like a ring culture guy. Like, I kind of despise ring culture. Like, you can have a fantastic year, you know, win 15 games, you lose by a field goal in the Super Bowl because of some fluke call, and everybody calls your season a disappointment. Like, I don't believe in that. I think you can have great seasons without winning at all. But if you gave me an option of throwing away a divisional round appearance for even a 10% chance to win the Super Bowl versus a 90% chance to lose out, I'm taking the 10% chance to win it all. Taking the 10% chance to win the Super Bowl.
Okay. I just, maybe, you know, we obviously have different opinions, but I think that from the standpoint of most organizations, that they understand how far-fetched it is to win Super Bowls, especially in the situation they were in, to just say...
Isn't there more reason to take the risk on winning it?
Okay, I just think that from an organizational standpoint, from overall revenues and everything else and positive, you know, how to build on last season and everything else, they would rather have the division win and the playoff win and the fact that they didn't get their doors blown off against Kansas City to build on, as opposed to the risk of not making the playoffs.
They're not putting that on the resume. They're not putting that on the 2024 resume. We didn't get beaten badly by Kansas City. They're going to hang the banner?
But it's part of it that they didn't get. You would be scrutinized more if you did.
Yeah, but you're not putting that on the resume.
I'm not trying to build a resume at this point. I'm trying to say that from this era of Texans football, you're building on all positives. If you got your doors blown off and got completely embarrassed like you did on Christmas, like by the Chiefs, it would be a hellacious offseason.
Yeah. Give me a 10% chance to win it all.
I know where you're coming from. Give me
rings. I like parades. If you have a chance at the ship and think a firing gives you a better chance, then pull the trigger, says a texter. Another texter can't fire him that late in the season. I would challenge. Why not? Well, it's disruptive. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Is this a potential name for the Rockets this offseason? We'll discuss next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So, new name potentially emerging for the Rockets this offseason. Not that they're interested per se, but a name that could be out there that makes sense. New York Post reporting that the Brooklyn Nets could reportedly look to package Cam Johnson in a trade to acquire a second lottery pick. Oh, Rockets have a second lottery pick. They have pick number 10. What do you think of Cam Johnson's game?
I think they've been high on him for a long time. I think he fits what they sorely need with a little bit more. I think he's more than just an above average shooter and good NBA three-point shooter. I think he's a guy that has some size as a three. I think that he gives you some versatility, but this team desperately needs shooting. And if all you're giving up is the 10 pick and some sweeteners of some case, I always say price matters. And that's why when we talked about Durant, if the price was substantially less than what we're talking about for Giannis or some of the big names, that's something that the Rockets should actually look into. If Cam Johnson is only going to cost you number 10 and some sweeteners, I think he's a huge upgrade for this team for what he brings to this team, not just from just flat out shooting, but he can do a lot. He's younger. He's active. He still finishes on the break. I think he'd be a great addition to this team.
Good score, at least it was last year, 19 points, which that was on a bad Brooklyn team, but still 19 points. His career, he's a 39% three-point shooter. So he's instantly one of your best three-point shooters. He shot 39% last year, too. His free throw shooting is very good. 89% last year, 85% over his career. Not a great rebounder for kind of being a bigger three. Averages just under four rebounds a game for his career, but 4.3 last year. I'm interested in Cam Johnson. I think he would be worth a look here.
I know they said it, but it was number 10, and what did they mention?
They
any more
mention
specifics?
It. No, I started to do kind of because there was a fella in my comments because I asked, "What should the Rockets do this?" Mm-hmm. And because Cam's going to make like 20-something million next year,
yeah, he gets
like right around
well.
20. So either you're trading 10 and Dylan Brooks, or you have to trade pick 10, Jock Landale, Aaron Holiday, and Tari Easton, it looks like. So those would be your two options.
I think they got to do you a solid. I think as part of it, if they want that lottery pick and they want to get out from under his contract, then they got to take your dead weight, or you're close to dead weight, right? You're less thans. And so I would say that you would, if you could get away with 10, Jock, Aaron, Holiday, and who else?
Tari.
See, I'm fine with that. Tari, to me, is who he is. I said that we were going to find out a lot based on what happened with this playoffs, and maybe even more than that. Tari's not an above-average offensive player. Tari's not a smart basketball player in a lot of cases. Tari's a good defender. Tari can finish on the break. Tari, to me, is a lesser-than version of Amen Thompson, and he's a guy that's caught in the mix as doubles to what you already have enough of. I can afford to give up Tari, Jock, Aaron Holiday, and number 10 to get a guy that really helps me significantly with shooting and scoring like Cam.
So you rather do the second package, Jock, Holiday, Easton, and 10 versus Dylan Brooks and 10?
Yeah, I think Dylan still brings a lot to the table, as much as I've been critical. But Dylan does defend. He does give you an identity in terms of a guy that's not going to take any crap from anybody. Yeah, maybe I think he goes too far sometimes. But I think that overall, he's still a starter for this team.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear you say that.
Yeah, but I I think it's more so my feelings from Tari about Tari have changed as it relates to a guy that is who he is, but did what he was supposed to do and better because he shot the ball so well this year in Dylan Brooks.
I would do the second one myself too. I'm okay with trading pick 10. Like, you have to eventually, and I talk about this all the time, like, you have so much of a surplus, whether it's picks or it's young players, that eventually you're going to have to combine them to try to level up. Cam makes this team better. Mm-hmm. He like, I don't know if he starts for you, because if you're keeping Dylan Brooks, he's not starting ahead of Dylan.
Probably not. But I think that there's still enough significant minutes to be played at multiple different positions for him, but primarily the three. And I think from the standpoint of, like, you know, I always make the analogy of, like, when you're collecting cards and you have doubles. Like, you have so many repetitive guys on this roster that you can afford to lose a Tari Eason in the process of gaining a guy that gives you so much that helps your team for right now. Because that's the other thing. Whoever you take at number 10, How soon are they going to be ready? We saw the number three pick in the draft be a guy that barely touched the floor at all this year.
Well, he's a bum.
So, depending on who you talk to. But for me to say that if I'm going to rely on, I need that number 10 pick. No, you don't. You need a veteran that can help you right now.
Yeah. And I do like Tari's game. But what annoys me about Tari is he doesn't play a lot. He played 57 games this past year. He played 22 games 2 years ago. And it seems like that issue has not gone away.
I was going to say, it's one thing to say the things I said, and I didn't even factor in the medicals of this mysterious leg injury that doesn't seem, as much as they thought they got it a year ago, it didn't go away. And they were resting him in significant portions of time to hope that it got better or that he could be more effective. At the same time, you don't want to lose value on him. The book's starting to come out on him, too, based on how he played in the playoffs and in certain games, to where 2 years ago, the Knicks were willing to give you a whole hell of a lot to get a Tari Eason. Mm-hmm. How many more teams are going to be willing to do that if they keep seeing how he played?
Yeah, he didn't have a great playoff. I still think he has a good amount of value, and I don't want to define him based on one playoff series, but do agree that he didn't have a great playoff. The second angle that you have to look at this, I think, if you're Rafael Stone, he's going to come up on a contract decision pretty soon.
He's going to want money.
You could actually extend Tari Eason this year if you wanted to.
Don't do it.
And the Rockets have extended guys early. They extended Alpi a year early. They extended Jalen a year early. Exactly. Which I actually agree with both of those decisions because they ended up paying them less than what they would have gotten. And you don't let talent walk away for free. I'm not sure that they can afford to pay Tari. So if you can't afford to pay Tari, why not trade Tari for a guy who's going to help your rotation?
See, I think from the standpoint of what you just said, it's what Tari thinks he's worth as opposed to what you and the league thinks he's worth. And I think that that's where you have to understand that if Tari thinks he's going to get money similar to and or guys that you just named and others that are younger but are better players, that's a problem in itself that you're going to lose him anyway. So you need to do something now before it's too late for a guy that probably overvalues himself with him and his agent compared to what the league and everybody else and his play is telling you.
Yeah, and I feel like Cam just takes the Tari spot in the rotation.
Yeah, and again, Cam is stuff that I personally still think is fixable, and I think that he's got too much skill. I don't think Tari has the skill of Cam. And I think that that also lends itself, and this medical thing that is a huge concern behind the scenes, mm-hmm. to where before you get stuck holding the bag on that, literally, and a guy that can't stay healthy, you get rid of him.
Yeah, the medical and the contract are my biggest reasons. And I think that Cam's a better player than Tari. Yes, you're trading the number 10 overall pick, too, but where does that fit?
That has more value to teams that are rebuilding than it has a team that's already well past rebuilt with a bunch of young talent.
There you go. We offered, we figured it all out. We're okay with pick 10, Tari Eason, and then salary filler, Jock Holiday for Cam Johnson.
But I'm not done.
Okay.
I don't have to be. I mean, I'm saying I'll make that move, and then yeah. I'll still be considering other moves.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, this wouldn't be the one and done.
No.
You only get one offseason move type of deal. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Let's get to the car wreck of the day. What is yours? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. Give you all f***ing bone, you prick. Where's my f***ing money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Car wrecks of the day, 713-780-ESPN. Hunter Brown's pitching for the Astros today.
The diesel.
What do you expect from the diesel?
I expect the diesel. Again, don't sleep on the A's. They're not a bad baseball team, but I think he's going to bounce back from playing in that rinky-dink park, minor league park. I think he's going to shove. I think he's going to go. What are you shaking your head?
I love your take lock on the Sacramento A's.
What do you mean?
You've had take lock on the A's.
I think they got a lot of good young talent.
Didn't we have an argument about how many?
We argue about everything.
But I think you said they're going to be like close to 500 this year.
Okay. Maybe I did.
You kept up with the Oklahoma Athletics lately?
No.
I think they've lost 9 of their last 10.
Okay. It's a long season.
8 games below 500.
Sweet.
They got last 8 games to make up. Last place in the AL West. I do like some of their pieces. I like Butler a lot.
There was a guy that I liked that you guys crapped on me for when I said he looked like he had a whole bunch of talent. BMAC was really all over me on it. He's turned out to be a good player. It's one of their outfielders. I can't think of his name right now.
It must be really good.
No, but I'm just saying he.
It wasn't Lawrence Butler?
It might have been.
I like Butler. It wasn't Rooker?
Yeah. No, well, definitely. Rooker was already playing well.
You know what just hit me? I keep calling Oakland. I don't care. Oakland A's. Who cares what I call the Oakland A's? I can call them Oakland. Who cares?
It's the city as opposed to the name.
What's
like
their play-by-play
Cleveland.
Name, lady? Oh, I might woman? Watch. I might watch their broadcast. See if we get any good sound.
You should. Yeah.
Oh, hello. That ball's hit a long
I don't
way.
Know her name, but yes, yeah, she's not great.
I might listen to their
I think Hunter Brown's going 6 1/3, one run.
Oh, hello. Jenny Kavnar.
Jenny what?
Kavnar.
Okay.
I guess. It's spelled C-A-V-N-A-R. Seems like a Kavnar to me, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Jenny Kavnar?
That sounds like you said it, right?
Are you opposed to me making fun of her calls?
No. Why would I ever be opposed to that?
I don't know. They might call me sexist or something.
Well, I mean, that's possible, too.
I'm not sexist.
Okay.
No.
Says you.
If anything, it's showing how fair I am. Because if I'm unwilling to criticize her calls, but I'm willing to criticize a man's calls, that means I'm being sexist.
Okay.
But if I criticize them equally, I think I'm being fair and just. Okay. Right?
Sure.
I feel like you don't care that much.
I don't. To be honest, I don't.
All right, what's your car rank of the day?
I got a couple. How about Coco Gauff shows up for her first match of the tournament and forgets her tennis rackets?
What?
All of them. She shows up with this big-ass bag that all tennis players bring out onto the court. She walks out onto the court. She didn't forget her leather bomber jacket from some fashion designer. She didn't forget to take the kid's hand of some kid that they're, you know, letting walk out with players. But she forgot the fact that your bag should feel a little lighter when you're missing 10 tennis rackets. They had to delay the match and find the rackets, and a ball boy had to run them out to her.
I think she knew.
She knew.
How could you, like you pointed out, how could you know that there's 10 rackets?
She blamed.
How could you not know?
She blamed
she did,
her
she knew.
Coach.
She wasn't ready to play.
Either that or from a marketing standpoint, she was trying to get some run out of it. But regardless, it's a car wreck that you show up for tennis.
It's a car. It's a car wreck. But yeah. I think she did it intentionally. I don't think she was either A, lathered up, or B, stretched out. I don't think so. I think this was a stalling tactic.
From a marketing standpoint, I have the ultimate example.
What?
When Jordan would wear the Air Jordans that were not sanctioned by the league.
There you go.
And he would walk in with the big gym bag with all the different colors that weren't approved. And he's like, it doesn't matter to me. They pay the fine and they're getting all the marketing they want out of it. So it's their tool. I'm just getting paid for it. I don't care.
Yeah, I think she knew.
You might be right. You might be onto something.
I think she knew. What else you got?
My favorite. Jordan Love threw out the first pitch at a Brewer game.
I didn't see this.
Oh, my God, Jeremy.
Video on here?
I should. Yeah. The link has the video. I should retweet it. It was just like one of his passes in a game. It was thrown up for grabs like a lob.
It wasn't that bad.
It was terrible. If you're a pitcher, at least throw it on somewhat of a line that it doesn't have an arc to it.
All right. Jordan Love wearing a Brewers jersey. Steps to the mound. Slow step. Heave high into the air.
Yeah, it was like a slow pitch softball, and even then it wasn't a strike.
Did you realize that they had the radar on it?
No, I did not.
39 miles per
hour.
Yeah,
that's, come on, man. I know Baker Mayfield once did it where he tried to throw gas, and he actually threw it really hard and fast. But you don't do that.
This wasn't a bad throw. It was just it was more of a too cool for school. He just went up there and kind of melted it.
As a quarterback known for you're supposed to be known for being
able
to throw
things. What do you want? You want him to go up there and throw a heater?
I want to throw a strike, or at least try to throw a strike, or throw it on a line so that it doesn't come in like it's like a hot air balloon.
I actually don't. I think this is your disdain for Jordan Love.
That's part of it.
I don't mind this. You know why I don't mind this? Because if C.J. Stroud went to the dike and threw out the first pitch tonight, he tried to throw it 93 and tore his UCL, I would be livid.
Don't have to throw it 93 to at least throw it so that it doesn't arc like that.
This is pass-fail. If you get out of the first pitch without blowing your UCL, it is a victory. I don't care how you do it. And if you don't embarrass yourself by heaving it to the backstop, by missing the catcher altogether, that's not that bad.
That was terrible.
That's not that bad.
Okay. That's what I have.
We'll pull the audience here in a little bit. Oh, it's Dove? I can't retweet it now. I hate this guy. The link, I blocked him.
There's other places you can get the video.
I'll have to look for the video elsewhere. I'm not retweeting this guy, this aggregator. All he does is click for engagement and farming results. No one does that. It's cheap. Cheap tactics. I want to nominate Doris Burke. Do we have the audio of Doris Burke here? Doris Burke trying to be cool.
I don't know much about history, but I know the French and German don't like one another. And Rudy says, bonjour, Mr. Hartenstein. Have a little bit of that left-handed dunk.
Bonjour.
That was crazy. I heard it.
Play one more time.
I don't know much about history, but I know the French and German don't like one another. And Rudy says, bonjour, Mr. Hartenstein. Have a little bit of that left-handed dunk.
Why did she say like one another?
I don't know, but then...
She's trying to be cool. She's not cool.
Last time she tried that, she got annihilated.
I thought that was unfair.
It probably was. But nonetheless, made for good fodder.
Like one another. Why is she going with an
Mike Green
A?
Mike Green had his follow-up to it was pretty funny, too. He said something like,
"Bonjour."
What are you actually trying to do here, George? Or something like that. Like
the way she said like one another kind of ignored. The way she said like one another annoys me more than the bonjour. She's trying to be hip. She's 58. She's older than that, I bet.
She's good, too.
How old is she?
I don't know.
You can't be talking like that if you're above 55.
Probably true.
You can't be saying like one another. Like she's rapping and dropping bars. Google says she's about 60 years old. What does that mean? She said they stopped counting? I think they stopped counting. Mary Lou Retton got a DUI. She got a Dewey in West Virginia. You got to be doing something to get a Dewey in West Virginia. Alex wants to nominate Brian for not being at work. Says the talent has to work. The producer should do. Vermont nominates Granado for saying the flight attendant, they got roughed up on a flight when it was just the uniform and the scarf. All right, what wins?
You call it.
We'll let Age call it. AJ,
what wins?
I'd say Doris.
Yeah, Doris.
There you go.
Like one another. Bonjour. Bonjour to you, Houston. Talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thank you, AJ, for all the hard work. He's blank on Branham. Talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Bonjour.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry in to the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom. Blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.